on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, on satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind? Never forget!
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Wednesday, and it is the 13th of April in the year 2005. And Alan is with us this evening. Alan Watt is with us this evening. I had a friend stop by, folks, so you forgive me. I was a little hurrying getting ready tonight. Our spiritual message tonight is the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi. Father, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, let me sow pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, let me sow hope. And where there is darkness, let me sow light. Where there is sadness, joy. And Father, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, it is in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it is in dying that we are born into eternal life. And Alan, thank you for being here tonight.
It's a pleasure.
It's a pleasure. Always.
Yep.
How has your day been besides the chemtrail spraying?
I got my truck stuck in the field.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I was taking out there to do some important stuff, and it's just not dry enough, eh? Yeah.
So did you get it out?
No, I spoke to it quietly and left it.
Oh, okay. So do you think it's going to come in by itself now?
Well, I did tell it what would happen to it if it didn't.
You know what?
Yeah.
These things can happen.
Yeah, I know.
Because this past summer, last summer, when the children were here, Brandon got a real bad shock out on the porch. Mm-hmm. And they were plugging in one of their players, and instead of connecting the cord, the extension cord, and then plugging it in, he had already plugged it in.
Uh-huh.
And I was in the house. They said his hair stood right up on end. It was a good one, and it knocked out some fuses.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got all the fuse things flipped back, but my my doorbell quit ringing, and I thought, well, there's something in there, something like a ballast.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, then maybe it's a ballast, and I have to find the company. And I was without a doorbell for I cannot tell you how long.
Yeah.
And then one day, suddenly, someone came up and rang the doorbell, and it's working, Alan, without doing anything to it.
Yeah.
I like that. So maybe you'll find your truck up by the house in the morning.
Well, I did threaten it, you know.
Oh, did you? But you did it quietly.
I did it quietly, yeah.
Okay. Well, Alan, there's something that I would like to address tonight. I would like you to address.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to respond. I don't know that what I say or the way I say it or whatever it is that's lacking, or maybe it isn't, maybe it's just difficult. The one thing that, well, what initiated this is that I got a call last night from a really nice man, and I mean this sincerely, and I know that it's with all of his heart, you know, the belief. Mm-hmm. But basically, it was the same thing I get from people who are, I guess it's Christian or Israel identity,
mm-hmm.
that it isn't Yahweh or Jehovah,
mm-hmm.
that God of the Old Testament. The name is wrong. It's Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
And Alan, what is the difference?
Well, to them it's everything, really. And that goes way, way back into the Middle East, where if you knew the exact pronunciation of the entity or demon, then you would control it. That was where it all stemmed from. And of course, it's all nonsense, because if you're talking to a creator, I'm sure the creator is bright enough to know who you're talking to.
Yeah, what about that part in the Old Testament where it says, if my people would... Does it say, know my name, or something about repent?
Mm-hmm.
But say, I wish I knew it word for word. I don't know if you know which one I'm referring to, but I think a lot of stuff is pinned on to that, too.
Mm-hmm.
If my people would say my name or know my name, mm-hmm. call upon me, I will hear their heal their land.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's to make people think that we have to have a name for Creator?
That's pretty well it. It's nonsense. I mean, if you're speaking to a Creator that's so dumb, with a low IQ, that if you get the name wrong, he doesn't hear you, then I think you're praying to the wrong entity.
Uh-huh.
Because obviously, anything that was a Creator knows exactly who you mean.
Well, but this goes along with the fact that it wasn't the Jews that were the chosen, it was the white Anglo-Saxon. And there's a lot of, evidently, research that people have done into bloodlines and
mm-hmm.
and people from back in that area.
Yeah.
And so what it comes down to is this. It comes down to believing that Creator would choose a special people and were to rule the world.
Mm-hmm.
Rule the world. It says in there, Alan,
yeah.
that you are going to loan to nations and borrow from none.
Yeah.
And it also says to a special people that they cannot loan money, charge usury
mm-hmm.
to their fellows, but they have to charge usury to the stranger
mm-hmm.
or the goyim.
Yeah.
Well, how is this reconciled in people's minds? Or is there something that you that at least to plant a seed that would get them thinking, Alan?
Well, their thinking would have to overcome their conditioning. That's the problem. And they've been so heavily steeped in this stuff from childhood that for many of them it's impossible to break that barrier.
Well, a lot of people who are Christian identity,
mm-hmm.
I don't think it's necessarily from childhood. It is what they deduced from whoever. This came from British Israelism, didn't it? This Israel identity or Christian identity.
Yeah.
What is British Israelism?
It began in the 1800s with one man who was a bit of a nutcase to begin with. In fact, he ended up in a psychiatric hospital for the rest of his days.
Who? What do you know a name?
I can't quite remember the guy's name.
Okay.
But he actually demanded that the King and Queen of England dethrone themselves and put him in power, because he believed that he was closer to the bloodline that was mentioned than they were. You see. So they locked him up. However, then the World Zionist Federation realized this could be an aid in their plans, And so they pushed it ever since. And you'll find that the World Federalist Society...
World Federalist or World Zionist?
World Federalist Society.
Okay.
Is the exact same address in every country as the World Zionist Society. It's one and the same outfit. So they're using religion once again to verify the Old Testament and to bring Israel up to be the basically the capital of the planet.
Yeah, and going along with that, isn't it the second coming,
mm-hmm.
The coming of the Jesus, and that his from what I understand, I don't know if this is British Israelism or Israel identity, but that Jesus is going to have his throne right there in Jerusalem.
Yeah, it's all you know, part of the plan. And you see, behind religions, you've had people who've conned everyone for thousands of years, so they do certainly know the techniques to use, and they could pull it off. You know, they could certainly pull it off, but. If you go into the Old Testament, Jehovah or Yahweh is a latecomer. He comes on the scene after the Elohim. And the Elohim are the creators, you might say. And so definitely Yahweh was a local deity.
Yeah.
That was then pushed. In fact, he was the volcano god. And he was eventually pushed up to overtake everyone else. Not by Jews, but by the ruling governments of the day.
The priesthood.
Yeah, and Constantine, I'm sure, had a good few chuckles at that one, because he was steeped in all the mystery religions, and even though he's given the accolade for bringing Christianity to the fore, he did not make Christianity the religion of Rome. He simply stopped the persecution of it, and the week prior to doing that, he created his own temple of the Mithraic cult. He was a Mithraic disciple.
Who, Constantine?
A form of masonry, you might call it. And he also created a church where you could go in, like all Caesars, and worship him in his own church. So he was worshipped as a god, you know. He had insurance policies out with every mystery religion. And so he used this religion, the Christian religion, to further the cause, which was, again, to lead eventually to world government, you know.
Uh-huh. And the... you know, I've mentioned this on the air before, because I don't really understand all of the writings that are attributed to sayings of Jesus,
mm-hmm.
but there are some that are so simple,
yeah,
and that you just absolutely know is true, you know, how to live, you know, do unto others.
Yeah,
yeah, that is it, mm-hmm. Alan, as you would have other, but... as you sow, so shall you reap.
Mm-hmm.
That I take that literally. And, you know, for people to think that, okay, well, you know, if I say a certain amount of Hail Marys or the priest, or I pay enough, or, well, you know, the Lord knows that I'm a weak sinner and Jesus died for my sins, so mm-hmm. I'm okay because I repent. And then you do it again and you repent again, and... It really gives people a cop out, but far beyond that, the way I see it, the way it appears to me, is that it has created that separation, that perceived separation between each of us and our Creator.
Yeah, yeah. Well, long before Christianity, that the mystery religions had always been around, and they knew from time immemorial that man would always seek out his Creator. He had a yearning to be in touch with the All, of whatever name they gave to it, and then they exploited it. The priesthoods actually exploited this natural need, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, out of the need, they create dogma. And from the dogma, they make rules and laws and enslave the minds of the people.
And if you don't buy into the dogma, you're a heretic.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember saying that on the air. Actually, it was sometime in 98. And why I remember that is because it was still daylight when I was doing the broadcast at the time.
Yeah.
But I said, I just want you all to know that I am a heretic.
Mm-hmm.
And what, and, you know, by the definition in the dictionary, that I do not ascribe or subscribe to the religious doctrine and the religious dogma that we have been taught.
Mm-hmm.
And I had somebody call me and say, that's a terrible thing to say about yourself. It is. In other words, it's terrible to be a heretic.
Well, yeah, heretic comes from hearsay, and that's what they forbid the public to do, was listen to hearsay. And from hearsay you have heresy. That's where it comes from. So you are forbidden to listen to any kind of hearsay or heresy. And if you did, then you were a heretic. So it's a fantastic form of mind control to do with guilt-tripping and sin, of course. And it's been exploited and used by professionals for thousands and thousands upon years. It's all mind control. All of it. You know.
I remember when Rick, what was his name? Wildstein. Mm-hmm. He was on this hour on this shortwave frequency at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And Lily listened to him and taped a thing one day and called and let me hear it. And this basically was his message. He's saying, you know, because he used to do news and tell all the terrible things that were going on. Uh-huh. But then he'd say, but that's okay. I see what's going on out there. I know what's going on, but it's okay because I know that it's because it's the time Jesus is coming, see?
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, come on, Jesus. He says, and establish your throne in Jerusalem, and I am going to be in there right in the front row,
mm-hmm.
you know, worshiping you and following you. And that it seems that the kingdom on earth is the message that is permeated throughout a lot of these religions, like, you know, the Jehovah's Witnesses. And
yeah, and of course, the history of the Witnesses was began by
Charles Stace Russell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's buried under a pyramid.
34 Holy, I was at his pyramid. I have photographs of them, Alan.
Yeah, and it's right opposite the Masonic Lodge, you know.
Yes.
And, of course, the whole idea of the Russellites, as they call themselves, was that the Gentiles had blown it with all their wars, and the goal was to bring the time of the Jews to rule the world. That was part of the Russellite philosophy.
Oh, you're kidding.
No. In fact, Balfour, who gave the Balfour Declaration, said the same thing. If you read the whole declaration, and generally you'll see only part of it published, but if you read the whole thing, he said the same thing, that the Gentiles had blown their ability for salvation, were unable to handle freedom, and therefore the Jews had the right to
rule. I have never read the whole thing then, because what I have, that I was under the impression that this was the Balfour Declaration.
Uh-huh.
Basically, it just said that, you know, that a home there will be established for the Jews. However, it said something about that this would not encroach upon the people who are living there already, in the Palestinians.
Well, they are nice liars, you know.
Yeah, I know that, but that's all I've got.
Yeah, I've got the whole thing. And don't forget, too, it was not a British government document. It was a personal letter to Baron Rothschild.
Yes.
So it never went. It was never debated in Parliament in Britain. This was a managed thing between Rothschild and Balfour. But that was the scheme of it all, was that, well, look, you Gentiles just can't handle it, so it's only right that the Jews take over. H.G. Wells, who was also a frontman for MI6, and who was given most of his material that he wrote his stories around, H.G. Wells was also, he categorized the races that should be allowed to live and the ones that would have to be exterminated long before Adolf Hitler came along. And he said that the British Crown had decided that Jews, because of their survival abilities and their ability to handle this economic system, would be allowed to survive alongside the aristocracy of Britain.
You're kidding.
No.
Well, so their ability to handle it, they're the ones that, well, the elite are the ones that created it, aren't they?
Yes.
From way back in ancient times?
Oh, yes, it's always been the elite, of course, yeah.
You know,
no, when you read into the books, H.G. Wells wrote the first set was a two-volume set called A History of the World, and he lays out there the races that would have to be destroyed because they could not come into this new order, which was an economic system. And he said that the red men would have to be killed off by diseases.
Oh boy, they did that.
And so would the blacks. He also had the Irish in there, by the way.
Yeah. Why the Irish?
Because the Irish have a temperamental streak where they don't like to go along with systems.
Uh-huh.
And the only ones who would be allowed to survive would be people who would conform to an economic system. And that's the key to everything, is the economic system. We, under law, exist to serve the economic system and not the other way around.
Yes.
You see?
Yes.
So yeah, they wrote a lot of their agenda openly back in the early 1900s and put down in that agenda the races that would have to be eliminated.
Well, you know, when you read enough different stuff, you know, you keep seeing these connections, Alan.
Yes.
And in the protocols, of course, their world court is, it looks like it's already built.
Mm-hmm.
They're in Israel.
Yeah.
But they say that their king despot, mm-hmm, of the blood of Zion is going to be the Pope of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was sharing with our listeners last night a thing that I got on the different popes. But there's something here that I didn't get to. And I think it's part of our conversation right now, and I'd like to share it. He was talking about the scandals of the child molestation,
mm-hmm,
and he said, notwithstanding the scandal and shock of the aforementioned, Rome carries on quietly with her program of world dominion. They lead the competition to establish the first one-world system that has ever existed. Their ultimate goal is global religious syncretism, and to eventually wield control and authority over every individual on earth. The human solidarity goals of the Roman Church are identical to the goals and objectives of the United Nations. This is why they're such a perfect fit. Rome only gives the appearance of objecting to the UN agenda. At the 1996 World Food Summit in Rome, Cardinal Angelo Sadana pledged the Holy See's support for the UN's humanistic programs of action. Rome also has designs on Jerusalem. Now, this is where the connection comes in.
Mm-hmm.
For 46 years after Israel's rebirth, the Vatican refused to acknowledge Israel's right to exist. But Rome wants to exert premier influence over Jerusalem, which will one day function as the capital of her world church. In a 1993 letter to the Pope, Shimon Peres promised to internationalize Jerusalem, granting the UN political control of the Old City and the Vatican hegemony over the holy sites within. This was confirmed by the Italian newspaper La Stampa. In March 95, the Israeli radio station Arut Shiva was leaked a cable from the Israeli embassy in Rome confirming the handover of Jerusalem to the Vatican. The future pope will establish his throne one day within the walls of the rebuilt temple in Jerusalem. It is from here that he will rule his world at church. Well, that reminds me that the king despot of the blood of Zion is said that will be the pope of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, and there's just another paragraph here, and this day may not be as far off as many believe. The cornerstones of the third temple have already been quarried by the Jewish group known as the Temple Mount Faithful. They're extremely well-financed and organized. They've also produced priestly vestments in accordance with scriptural outlines and are presently attempting to breed a perfect red heifer in anticipation of the coming dedication ceremonies. Obviously, Rome and the Temple Mount Faithful are headed for a showdown. I don't think so. And do you, Alan? I don't think it's going to be a showdown.
No, I wouldn't think so.
Okay, here's the last. In a letter sent to the Vatican in July 2004, the Temple Mount Faithful demanded that Pope John Paul return the Temple Menorah and other vessels and treasures removed in 70 A.D. by Titus and taken to Rome, where they're presently held within the secret Vatican archives. And that's the end of the article, and this was written by some guy in Toronto. But I think there's a lot of truth in here, except that there's going to be a showdown. This last pope, according to different many sources, his mother was a Jew. He went to Israel and apologized on behalf of all Christians for the terrible persecution of the Jews that have taken place over the past 2,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy was a Jew.
Well, he also worked for I.G. Farben just prior to World War II.
Yep. And he was not a he became a Catholic. I understand that he became a Catholic in order to escape whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then he became a cardinal, and the next thing you know, he's a pope. There's not going to be any showdown.
Mm-hmm.
Their puppets are being put in place right now.
Oh, sure, but the Catholic Church was always used for this, you know.
Yeah.
In fact, if you look at some of the big names of Catholic popes, they were also world bankers in their own rights, you know.
I was telling our listeners last night about this beautiful book I have, written by David Yollop, I think his name was. It was titled In God's Name, and it was about Pope John Paul I,
mm-hmm,
that was in only for 33 days.
Yeah.
And he was going to get rid of Marchenko, the Vatican banker, because he found out that they had laundered $900 and some million of bad bonds through the Vatican Church.
Yeah.
And it was the night before when he handed these instructions to his Secretary of State, which he had actually inherited from the previous pope.
Mm-hmm.
And the author said that the guy begged Pope not to do this, evidently knowing what was going to happen. And he said, I want this done. And Marchenko, of course, was going to be gone. Marchenko was some bishop or cardinal.
Mm-hmm.
And the next morning he was found dead. He was poisoned.
Yeah, and he was going to make a speech that day too to ban Freemasonry in the Vatican.
Yes, what is it called? 3-2-P-3-P.
There's P2
P2 Freemasonry.
Yeah.
Yes, that was mentioned. We have to take our 60-second break here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was a pope that could have done some real good. He was going to get rid of the birth control ban for Catholics. And they got rid of him in 33 days, Alan.
Yeah,
nice, tidy number, huh? Yep. Okay, folks, we'll be right back with Alan Watts. Stay with us. Get your pen handy, please.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Folks, while you have your pen in your hand, which I hope you do, let's give you Alan's address in case you would like to order the two books that he's put together. Excuse me. If the books are $25 each, and that includes the postage. They were $20, but the postage is getting so astronomical. Alan's address is site, just a minute, site 41, Alan?
Yes.
Box 4. It's Alan Watt, folks, A-L-A-N Watt, W-A-T-T, and do not, please, do not send a U.S. postal money order. If you're going to, not a check either, either FRNs, the just cash, or an international postal money order, and you can get that right at your post office, because he cannot cash either a check or could not use a U.S. Postal money order, okay? And the address is Site 4, 41, excuse me, Box 4. Site is S-I-T-E, by the way. Box 4, Estaire, E-S-T-A-I-R-E, like the stairway. Estaire with an E on the end. Estaire, Ontario. And the postal code is P as in Paul, 3. P-3, E as in Elizabeth, 4. N as in Nora, 1. So that is P3E4N1, and write Canada on it underneath that. And you do have to have your full name and address. I suppose if you make up a name, it doesn't matter, but it won't be delivered. They're getting real tight with their requirements on how you have to address mail, etc., that gets into Canada. So do it right or it isn't going to get through. Alan, A-L-A-N, Watt, W-A-T-T, Box 4, Estaire, Ontario, P-3, E-4-N-1, Canada. And if you're only going to get one, get number one, the first booklet he put together. And I know that if you happen to be a new listener, sometimes when Alan gets talking about ancient history, he can blow your mind away, because that's what happened when he first began coming on with us. And I kept making qualifying statements and saying to our listeners, now, just because Alan Watt is saying this doesn't mean it's so. I mean, I don't know that it isn't, but I cannot verify it because I haven't done the research. We don't have access to many of the books that Alan has read and has. And then the next thing you know, listeners started sending me saying, look at this, look at this. This is exactly what Alan said. And finally what Alan did was put together a booklet that gave, there's photocopies of pages out of the book. And his own writing explaining what you are seeing and what each of those things means. And I think that if you have not, well, even if you have been a long time listener, and have heard Alan a lot of times, you will very much appreciate the books. Once again, they're $25 each. There are two of them. And folks, it's $140 an hour just for the shortwave time to do this broadcast. It has, by the way, in June, we will have completed 7 full years of listener-sponsored broadcasting. I think that a miracle has happened, because what I hear from other people and other broadcasters, it's never happened before. To me, that speaks volumes about you and who you are, our listeners, and I respect and I appreciate you. But if you're listening, if you appreciate the information and you're not helping to sponsor it, well, we're still, by this time of the month, we're probably back at about 6,000. As of the end of March, we were $5,300 in arrears. And we did take a huge chunk out of it, but I'll tell you, it really builds up fast. So if you'd like to see the broadcast continue, we do need your help. Let me give you my address quickly. One more time, Jackie Patru, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, that's T-O-N, Millerton, Pennsylvania, 16936. Okay, Alan. So we were talking, what were we talking about?
Well, the fact is, organized religion has always been used for the purpose of control from the most ancient times.
Oh, yeah, we were talking about Pope John Paul I.
And if you really want to find mystery religion, you simply look into the established churches, because that's where it all began.
You know the word pagan?
Yeah.
Well, I looked it up one day. I got a whole bunch of dictionaries here, and every time Chuck found one in a old bookstore, all different, from all different eras. And I looked up the word pagan in every single one of them, including Webster's 1828, whatever. Pagan, the word is connected with the word heathen, and that is a person of the heath. That is,
yeah.
Pagan is really means rural folk.
Mm-hmm.
But what the dictionary said is that they were people who did not come into the organized church, the doctrine and the dogma of the church. And Alan, do you know that almost every single one of them, one of the definitions of a pagan was a Gentile?
Yeah.
Now, that kind of confused me.
Yeah.
Well, can you explain that?
Oh, sure. I mean, all ancient peoples had meaning in life. They had meaning from life. They lived the meaning of life. And it didn't matter, really, where their source of inspiration came from. They lived their life, and life has to be meaningful. If you take away the meaningfulness of life, then you have robots and slaves. And of course, the organized religions were intended and set up to do exactly that. The ancient people had special sacred spots all over the world, and it meant something to them. That's all important, you see.
Yeah, and it wasn't necessarily evil, was it, Alan?
No, not in the least. No, not in the least. In fact, there's far less bloodletting with the so-called pagani as there has been with established religion.
But what
established
about
religion has been a horror show.
Alan, what about the people, now, I guess, I've thought of them as pagans, but who sacrificed their children.
Yep.
Like I remember reading in Hawaii, you know, they throw their babies into the ocean,
yeah,
sacrificing them to the gods. Mm-hmm. Some of them, when they built a building, the four corners, before they put those posts in,
yeah,
an infant was thrown in there.
Mm-hmm.
Where did that come from, the priesthood?
It came from Babylon. And in fact, the archaeologists today who've worked steadily from what was Babylon right into Jerusalem have found no sign of a Jehovah-type worship. What they have found is that the same exact
Malik.
System of Babylon, where you killed children and often put them in an urn, and you put them on each four corners to protect the inhabitants. So all this rubbish and nonsense about a great Judaic people who worship this Jehovah is absolute rubbish. The proof is in the earth. The proof is there. It's buried in the earth. And in fact, you can't tell Judaism apart from the Phoenicians, who also did the same thing of killing firstborn children and burying them in the four corners of the structure. You see, in the ancient times, even in Rome, the emperor himself, to open up land for building purposes, he would make the crossroads with the plough, and he would plough an exact square, and everywhere that...
Who did this?
The old Caesars.
Okay, the Caesars themselves?
Yeah, that was the law.
Okay.
That they had to plough a square part of the land with a plough, and wherever any structure went up, then a sacrifice was given, a human sacrifice, so that the mother goddess would not be offended. That was their belief system. And that was rampant. That same belief system is exactly the same system as Babylon and Jerusalem, and on you go.
The Caesar, are you speaking of in Rome?
In Rome and their empire. Yeah. Wherever their empire extended to, it was the same system. Because there is only one mystery religion.
You mean the Romans were doing baby sacrifices?
Yeah. And even today, in the lands of the so-called Phoenicians, which was the Holy Land, basically.
Well, okay, tell me where that was.
That was the Holy Land. That was Jerusalem and round about Jerusalem.
That was Phoenicia, huh?
Uh-huh. And the Greeks called that area the land of the Phoenicia. South of them was the Edomites. But that land itself was the Phoenicians.
Aren't the Edomites the one the Jews supposedly are supposed to get rid of?
Well, you'll find they were not too happy with anybody else, you know.
Unless they...
Everybody was their enemy, basically. But what you find with the Phoenicians, and this is the key to it all, is an economic system. And the Phoenicians were the ones who lived in that area, who always created an artificial island.
Artificial what?
They would always create an artificial island.
Island?
Yeah, and that was their capital. And from there, they would spread their system of commerce all over the ancient world.
You mean somewhere out in the ocean?
Somewhere out in the ocean.
They would create an island.
Yeah, a man-made island.
How do you do that, Alan?
They poured millions and billions of tons of soil and stone and so on, and then they built their island.
They would find, in other words, sort of like a shoal or something that was already fairly not deep,
uh-huh.
Fairly shallow.
Yeah. And that's what they did, and they built it off Joppa, off the coast of Israel and the Mediterranean Sea. And that was their capital. And then when they moved eventually to Venice is a play on Phoenician. Phoenician,
uh-huh.
Same thing.
Uh-huh.
And that was their capital of
Venetian
the world.
Red, yes.
And Venice itself, again, was created by man, by the creation of an artificial city. And so the M.O., you can trace down through history wherever they go.
Yes, and this gets so confusing because I read a fairly long piece about Venice. I think it was Venice where the Jesuits were supposed to be so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Is that so? Was it Venice?
Well, they were definitely powerful because the Jesuits traveled even to ancient Japan. They created the warrior caste of Japan. It wasn't natural to that country. They actually gave them the warrior caste, and they've done it wherever they've gone.
Uh-huh.
If you say
Phoenician, you know, I had Phoenician and Venetian.
It's the same thing, you see.
Yeah, you know, I oil paint.
And the phoenix bird
Venetian
died
red.
500 years.
The phoenix bird.
Uh huh. And it's recreated in its own image.
And that would be take off on the Phoenicians?
That's right. And you'll find, if you say Jesus, and then take it into the French, you have Je suis, I am.
Jesuit.
Je suis. Jesuit is Je suis. Same thing, I am. The whole thing is the mystery religion. All of it is a mystery religion.
And are you saying, well, now I have read that the one we know is Jesus, but that wasn't really his name.
Yeah, Jesus is a Greek term.
Yeah.
Because the initial writers of the Gospels wrote primarily in Greek, and they had no problem by saying son of Zeus, because they were familiar with the son of Zeus, Jesus.
Jesus.
The other name is Apollo, of course. And Jesus is the son, you know. He is the S-U-N. If you look at the King James Bible, you get a proper King James Bible.
You mean like the original one?
Yeah, you'll find that the accolades that they give to King James says you are the S-U-N. King James is the S-U-N. And then talk about the late Queen Elizabeth I, who is the Eastern Star. That's where the Eastern Star Lodge comes from. That's in all the original King James Bibles.
All Masonic.
It's all Masonic, yes.
Hey, Alan.
Yeah.
Okay. Hold on, just go ahead. Go ahead, hon.
Yes. So these guys have literally pulled the wool over everyone's eyes for thousands of years. You look at all the churches. They have a spire, which is the phallic symbol, going right back to Egypt, and it's called On. And the phallic symbol is called On. It's in the English language today. We use On for an erection. And you walk through the phallic symbol into the box, and you walk through the vulva. That's why you have what they call a Norman arch. And you walk through it into the church, into the box. And it always faces to the east, where the sun comes up.
Is this in the Catholic Church mostly?
It's in all Christian churches.
Well, are you saying then that all Christian churches, that the entrance faces east?
That's right.
Gosh, I never noticed that, Alan.
And the guy gets dressed up in his robes, which is a female dress, because he portrays the hermaphrodite, male and female in one. Because in the beginning, God created man and woman, and his perfect image created them both. Which means, and this is in the Talmud, that the God they're talking about is a hermaphrodite, is male and female in one. They worship on Saturn's day, which is Saturday, and that's why they wear the black robe. When they wear the black robe, they are also ultimate law. They are all law.
Is that what the black robe means?
That's what it means.
What?
It's law. It's the law.
Black?
Why judges wear the black robe. They are the law. They are Saturn. When they sit on that bench above the people, and there's a bar in the way, they belong to the bar, they are speaking as God. They are God.
In the courtroom. In the courtroom.
Yep.
But how does law connect with black?
It's, again, the ancient system that predated Judaism and all the rest of them.
You mean that's what they did, was wore black?
Yes, and when they brought even Hebrews in for trial, this is how they said it, you know. They held them by the short and curlies. They held them by the, you know what?
The pubic hair.
By the B-A-L-L-S, the bowel, you know. And if you lied, they crushed it. They crushed your manhood. And that's where the short and curlies comes from.
Oh, jeez.
Yep. And this is all history. It is recorded history. And we've been fooled for such a long, long time with all this nonsense that we have not allowed ourselves to live. And these guys who run this system know exactly where they're taking us and what they're taking us to. And they have decided that they want to eradicate that part of the mind, the brain, which allows you to think of yourself as an individual.
Okay, what part of the brain is that?
It's your higher survival centers. Arthur Kessler worked for the United Nations. He wrote about it. He said we will have to lobotomize that part of the brain that gives them their individuality, because they won't need it anymore since the state will be making all their decisions for them.
Are we talking about in the pituitary area?
It also
like a frontal lobotomy?
Yeah. It includes that. It includes that. They've been right up front with their agenda.
Alan, was it Arthur Kessler who wrote...
The 13th Tribe.
Okay, I know the 13th Tribe, but what about the ghost in the machine?
The ghost in the machine is what they refer to your ability to know yourself as a distinct personality.
Wasn't that a book?
The Ghost in the Machine was a book, yeah.
Was it Kessler who wrote that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Arthur Kessler.
Yep, he worked for the United Nations on a way to eradicate what they call the problem of individuality.
So you know what had just occurred to me?
Mm-hmm.
These psychotropic drugs that they're putting everybody on,
mm-hmm.
Do you think that that does something with that frontal lobe of the brain? Do you think that that's a way of chemically lobotomizing people, Alan?
They are doing it. That's what the spraying in the sky is all about.
Well, yeah, but besides the spraying in the sky,
mm-hmm.
The psychotropic drugs that they're putting so many people on and so many children,
mm-hmm.
Do you think that that is sort of like a chemical... I mean, they actually get zombie-like in a sense. I guess
it shrinks the brain. When you put them on, the drugs that have been put on, it actually shrinks the brain. And what they're doing is eliminating all those people with leadership abilities who can convey what they understand and know and have learned to other people. They're eliminating them before they become a problem. And this is not fantasia. It's been written about by the very people involved. It's just that no one reads these books.
So the ghost in the machine would be the actual soul or spirit of the soul of the individual?
It's everything that makes you who you are.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's what they mean. And they're doing it.
I've always meant to get that book and I've never done it.
Mm-hmm. And Arthur Kessler was quite candid about it. He believes in it, of course. He worked for Stalin, and then he came over to the University of New York and taught the same theories there.
Kessler was a Russian Jew?
Yeah. And then he also spent the rest of his life working on methods to eradicate that part of the brain that makes you who you are. An individual.
You know what just occurred to me? That what people who live in cities, that every opportunity that they get to leave the city and find a place, Alan, that is, you know, where the birds sing and the crickets. There aren't too many crickets around anymore that I know of, but, you know, the little peeper frogs.
Yeah.
And the whippoorwills and the mourning doves and the mockingbirds, and just to get out and away from the artificiality of the city. When I had my business in Springfield, Illinois, I actually lived 50 miles from work, but it was a wooded subdevelopment, you know, down the highway.
Yeah.
And off the highway and then into from what they called the hard road in a beautiful wooded 360 acres of woods and a little lake. And to me, it was just, it was like heaven to be able to escape there. But there were people in Springfield, when they had a long weekend, they would go to St. Louis. And I would go, why are you going to St. Louis? Well, you know, they're going to go to a game and they're going to... I go, why don't you go camping someplace?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just amazed me that people who already lived in a city wanted to go to a bigger city for a vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And I really mean this, folks. I truly mean this from the bottom of my heart. If you haven't done it, take a vacation, take a weekend, take your children, take yourselves. Get the hell out of the city and find a place where water runs, a little brook, a stream, a river, but go someplace where there aren't telephones. Buy a tent and go camping. Alan, how else are people ever going to be able to get in touch with themselves?
Well, their time is running out because the agenda is there. It's ongoing very quickly now.
Huh.
And you will find that those who are dead already, they're dead in the world. And the few who are truly awake are often caught up in confusion.
Yeah.
There are very few people who are truly awake who have broken through all the confusion.
Uh-huh.
But the agenda is going on right now. SETI, the Egyptian pharaoh, Seti,
we're out of time.
Was the one who put into effect the long-range plan to lobotomize the public.
Alan.
And that's why you have Seti.
Seti, we're out of time. We're out of our hour, let me put it that way. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back with you Monday. Thank you for being here tonight. And Alan, thank you for being here with us tonight. Okay, folks. We'll see you back Monday. Have a lovely 4 days. Good night. God bless you all. My darling.
Good night.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network.